is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Seahawks wrapping up OTAs for the week. A couple people out there. Dave Wyman was out there. Paul Moyer here to talk about everything going on with the Seahawks as he is each and every week, which gets everybody excited. People really look forward to his appearances with great anticipation. The building is buzzing.
All right.
Dave Wyman's giving me the look to just stop it and bring him in. He's with us on
next
the
thing you know, Paul's going to want to get paid, and you know we're trying to get him paid, but he's going to be a full-time employee.
He's with us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Hello, Paul.
Hey, Bob, Dave. Have you guys ever seen the clip where they're introducing Tiger Woods on the first tee and he's paired with Phil Mickelson and they go, and now the Masters champion and the U.S. Open champion and 17-time winner, and just it's a three-minute, you know, intro to him, and finally Phil Mickelson goes, all right, already, let's go.
So I guess Dave and is Phil Mickelson laughed. In this case?
Dave's Phil, and I'm Tiger.
The only reason I know that story is because you told it last week, Paul.
No, I didn't. Not
okay, it was
one.
2 weeks ago.
I have a good memory, Dave.
I'm kidding, somebody. Oh boy! All right, here we go.
Hey, Paul, we played some sound bites of Jordan Brooks yesterday, where he made it sound. We were sort of parsing what he was saying, but it sounded like KJ's not going to be back. He was talking about shoes to fill, filling his shoes, and what he meant to the organization is history here, almost as if it was a done deal. And I'm curious from your perspective. Not so much about Jordan Brooks, but Bobby Wagner, a guy that we spend a lot of time talking about for different reasons. But how does his role change, if at all, without KJ there? Or do we just assume whoever steps in for KJ will play the same and Bobby's duties will be the same? He'll play the same way? Or is there a different expectation on how he should approach his game without KJ?
Well, there definitely puts more on him from a mentorship standpoint for Bobby. When I look at KJ, he switched positions last year. So I don't think not having KJ there at the position he was on last year will change anything. But look, KJ is a really smart player too. I think, the players look up to him. He's really humble guy. He's approachable. I think that's going to be tough. And I think Bobby's going to have to fill that leadership void. And it's not that Bobby's not that a leader. It's just, I think he's going to have to expand his role. And that's a different personality. So, at the same time, look, Brooks' second year, you learn quick how to become a veteran really fast. Mm-hmm. And he got playing time. He's going to be looked to be a leader as well. I just think it expands the role. And, some veterans don't love that role of being a mentor. Some do. I think Bobby enjoys that. He's just going to have a bigger role in that.
Hey, Paul, you sent a list, and I'm not quite exactly sure what you meant, but you're talking about next level, and I'm thinking maybe you're thinking, okay, these are the guys that really need to take a big jump next year. And you have Jordan Brooks, Cody Barton, Kyle Fuller, Damian Lewis, LJ Collier, Jamal Adams, Will Disley, Marquise Blair, who looked really good out there today, by the way. Looks like he's running around really fast. And then Akilo Witherspoon. What do you think? Tell us about that list.
So I had two lists. Now I was normally as your team is progressing and you're developing, you have to have the young guys make huge jumps at some point. You have to have your second and third year players eventually be Pro Bowl type players or be leaders on the team. And without it, you just can't. There's not enough money to go get 5 year veteran guys who are playing at a high level. So we've always got to have this development and a big jump. And so I had what I call the next level, and that was them. I still think there are two players, though, and my first one is that have to make the biggest jump, and they're veteran guys. And one of them is Russell Wilson. The other one I had is Bobby Wagner. And normally you're not looking for your veteran star players to have to take another jump forward. In this case, I believe we do. It's partly because I think the way they played last year. And then again, that was my next level. Sorry, trying to communicate this or make sense of this. My next level was more the younger guys with Jordan Brooks, Cody Barton. I think Fuller is a guy that I really am hoping he takes the next step, because I think athletically he's a guy that I'd like to have at center. Mm-hmm. Damian Lewis, same thing. I mean, he played well last year, but now I need him to play really well, really consistent, really be able to handle potentially Aaron Donald one-on-one. I threw LJ Collier, counting on him this year. There's one probably surprise in there. It was Jamal Adams.
Yeah.
And not that he's not a first or second year player or even a third year player, but I put Jamal Adams in there because he's got to get better in pass coverage. Unless we're planning on playing him outside linebacker all the time, he's got to make plays in the passing game with interceptions. He's got to play better man-to-man defense, a better technique. A lot of times he relies on his instincts, which is important, too much. So I just had a list of people. I said, you have to play better than you did last year for us to get to where we want to be, and that's a Super Bowl. And so that was my list there.
Yeah, well, and one guy, and I agree, and especially so LJ Collier stands out in that list. What about Rashad Penny? I mean, and I guess the only reason is those two guys are first-rounders. I feel like LJ Collier is a year behind. Like, he had this year what should have been his rookie year. And, there were injuries and stuff like that. But what do you think about Rashad Penny? Have you just given up on him? No.
I think Penny has a chance still to be a really good running back for us. The reason why I didn't put him in there is I don't need him to play great next year as long as Carson plays great. And so this was more of, these players have to play better for us if we're going to improve as a team, because we're going to be counting on Jordan Brooks, obviously. I think we're going to be counting on Cody Barton. I think we're looking for an upgrade at center, and so if we have Posick as our center again, that means we really didn't improve. So again, Damian Lewis, I think, has a chance to be better. Collier, I think Jamal Adams has a chance to be better. Maybe not statistically, obviously, with sacks, but I think overall game, being healthy, he has a chance to make, I think, to be better than last year, which should be a positive. I had Will Dissly in there. I didn't think he played as well last year as we were counting on his improvement. So I think he needs to make a step. Marquise Blair, same thing. Whether he's playing a safety or nickel, I believe we're going to count on him. And finally, Witherspoon. I put him last because he wasn't on our team last year. Yeah. We weren't counting on him, but now we are. And he's got to take it to another level, hopefully play like he did the last couple of games with San Francisco. And if he does, then we're a better team. So that was the reason why I wrote that.
Yep. As far as Dissly goes, Dave and I have spent a lot of time just talking about how the tight ends as a group were used last year with this team, which was not very much at all, Paul. And I'm curious how much of Dissly's lack of production you put on the play calling and just it seemed to go away from the tight ends in general. I mean, you look at his target to catch ratio was pretty good. He was targeted less than 30 times the entire season. So how much of that do you put on him? Was that just, all right, maybe he's just not getting open, so they're not throwing him the ball? Or do you look at that more as it was just the scheme and the way they were calling plays last year?
Yeah, they used him more as a blocker, and so the opportunities weren't there for him in the passing game. So that's part of it. But the other part is he dropped some passes that hurt us, in some key situations. It wasn't a bunch. It was two or three. I just think he needs to be more consistent in catching the football. We know he has good hands. We know he's a good blocker. He was explosive his rookie year. I mean, he made some big plays. He didn't look as explosive last year, and I think part of that's coming back from injuries. You guys know me. I don't dog players necessarily. I look for what they can do, and I think he can do more. I know he's going to be good in the run game and pass protection, but he is going to be counted on this year. If we go with a bunch of two tight end offense, which I think we probably will, whether him or Everett, that would be nice, because if you have two good blocking tight ends and you don't always know which one's going to block and which one's going to release and how you're going to slide your protection, he's going to be counted on to be in that passing game, and the tight ends are going to be very important in this offense this year.
Yeah, they look good running around out there today. Gerald Everett, so smooth, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you mentioned Russell Wilson playing better, and you had some stats on how he played the last 9 or 10 games of the season last year. How much do you put on, you know, Russ, and how much do you put on, you know, what the offense was last year?
Well, first of all, you know, look, the quarterback, it's all on him. He has the ball in his hand. He gets to make the decisions. You know, how he plays is, you know, it's 80% certainly on him. But the other part is, you know, on scheme, and obviously he needs some the other players to play well too. But I was just looking at his statistics last year, and again, this is a potential positive. And what I mean by that is, if he can play better, again, there's some upside for this team. So I was looking at his last 9 or 10 games, and his medium quarterback rating was 87. I mean, that's in today's game, that is, you're hardly a starter in this league. He had 10 touchdowns. This is actually going into the playoffs as well. 10 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. He had 6 games where he had a QB rating under 100. And actually, if you took the Jets game out, he only had 2 of his last 9 games, again, counting the playoffs, where he had over 100 QB rating. And that's not Russell Wilson. And that's we always expect more from him than that. So I'm hoping that it's scheme, because I think that was a big part of it and what we were trying to do at the end. And certainly teams made an adjustment and we didn't. But I just look at the potential upside to him. If he can just get back to what he normally does, you know, then maybe we look at 13, 14 wins out of the 16-game season. So if Russell plays well, maybe not like the first half. I mean, those were crazy numbers, but more consistent. You know, scheme, these other guys make a jump, which I think they can. You know, golly, man, we have a chance to be a pretty good football team this year.
Before anybody texts in, 17-game season. I've screwed that up.
It's going to take a while.
It's going to take
a
while.
It's like Los Angeles Chargers.
Did I say 16 or 17?
You said 16. I went, yeah, that's right. And then I thought, oh, no, it's 17. You know what? It's like putting the I still go back and look, how did that guy get on second base? Extra inning games.
You missed
it. I mean,
it's
just like, Paul, I've fallen for it like 4 times. And then, you know, there's been a number of times that I've gone, 16-game season.
Yeah. There's a grace period.
You know, the reason why that actually threw me off is I actually have it written in front of me. Don't forget to mention 17-game season. Yeah. I looked at it, and I still said 16.
Yeah, you're just like, no, that can't be right.
It's okay, Paul. We get a grace period. It's going to take a while. Like I said, it's like the Chargers. You still, every once in a while, will slip and say San Diego.
It's still the San Diego Chargers. I don't care what anybody says.
Okay.
San Diego Chargers.
Well, the Washington football team took a while, too. I got that one down now. So if they ever do have a name after Washington, that's going to throw me off.
But I don't think they should. I think they should stay with what they're doing.
I do too.
Yeah.
Every time
too.
I see WFT, I see WTF.
And then he tries to say it out loud over the air, and we have to stop him.
No.
Nobody wins with that, Paul. Hey, as far as Julio Jones goes, we talked to you about, you know, the potential, and we talked to you when there was the word that he was talking, or the Seahawks had made a call, and Russell and he were talking, and then we find out, all right, it's not a first-round pick. It's a second-round pick next year and a fourth-round pick the following draft in 2023. Goes to the Titans. Dave and I talked about it a lot. Like, yeah, you know, if we're in a fantasy football world, who wouldn't want him on their roster? But at that price tag, at that age, even with what feels like a better deal in terms of draft capital, I'm not overly disappointed. How do you feel about it? And then also the fact that every team in the NFC West apparently made a call inquiring about his services.
Well, I'm happy he ended up in Tennessee. Obviously, it would be a little tougher football game for us in our opener, but really glad he stayed out of the NFC. He's been a tough matchup for us in anyways. It wasn't the second round pick or potential first round pick. You know, it was the $15 million.
Yeah,
I said, you know, we're going to have to subtract something if we put him on this team. And does he make us a better football team with what we're going to have to subtract? And I didn't think we would. It's not a need. It's a want. Would love it. He looks great in a uniform. He'd look great in a Seahawk uniform too. But, again, would have been nice. Huge luxury, not a need. And I don't think we're done yet. You know, I think we're still going to be adding a couple more people.
All right, Paul, I've gotten a lot of heat on this show about, you know, constantly praising Cody Barton. You know, people asking if I'm going to ask him to prom and, you know, out to dinner.
Where they're going on vacation.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I saw him out there today. Look good, man. Look good. Let's say they do end up signing KJ Wright. I feel like Cody Barton, do you think he's a starter in this league? Because I think he is, and I think he's got to go on the trade block if you have KJ. I mean, I think KJ is probably maybe going to be better as the strong side linebacker than Cody Barton would this year. Maybe, you know, and that'll fade as age goes on. But what do you think about the notion? I mean, do you see Cody as a starting linebacker in this league?
Well, coming out of college, yes. I don't think there's enough data, you know, for me to have a strong opinion on what I've seen.
Why don't you just go off the cuff like Pro Football Focus does, Paul, and just, you know, just wing it and like they do, and yeah, and just see what you come up with. I trust you more than them.
I think Ben Burkervins was the highest rated linebacker in Pro Football Focus last year.
Yeah,
he actually was. Right. He's the highest rated linebacker in the league. So again, I would not to get too far off, but I was researching Pro Football Focus a little bit and how they got started. And really, they're not even looking for football guys, Dave, anymore. They're hiring just engineers and algorithm type of people. So there really isn't a quantitative piece to their grading for the most part. They have a checkbox of things they have to look at, and they start checking these boxes, and it gets done. And so that's why there's so much, you know. I think it's really hard to have just statistical data in the NFL. It's baseball. It's easy because it's a one-on-one sport, right? You got a pitcher. You got a guy hitting. That's an easy, you know, data point to add some algorithms for. Football is much more difficult. So not to get too far off that, we'll get back to Cody here. I don't think they would trade him, Dave, because he's still young, and KJ – you know, how long is he here? A year or two? And we don't know with Bobby yet. And you still have him at a pretty low cost from a salary cap standpoint. I think he is, from what I've seen. I just not enough data there. And we're going to find out, because I think they're going to count on him. I'm shocked at this point that no one's made an offer to KJ, that he's not back here yet. Again, we're past the June 1st timeline. Things usually get done. It's pretty quiet out there. So we'll see. But I'm comfortable going in with Cody. I'm probably not going to ask him out to dinner and prom like you would. But, you know, I'm good with him.
Hey, let me bring you back to Penny and Collier for a minute, because those are two guys that I've picked on, and Dave's been more in the camp of defending them. Collier, I've been wildly disappointed. Maybe they're misusing him. Maybe he's not built for what they initially had in mind, him rushing off the edge and being a sack guy. Maybe he's more of an interior guy. I don't really have expectations of him. And same with Rashad Penny. I mean, granted, big injury. I understand he's going to come back from that, and we'll see what he's made of. But at the same time, this is a contract year. This is where he's either going to convince them that he's worth bringing back, or, all right, we're going to move on from him. How do you see that playing out? I mean, he's got to show something. You were talking about, yeah, well, I don't really need to see anything because you got Carson. Well, I feel like he's got to show something to sort of determine his fate with his team. Give me a thought on each of these guys. Just Collier, did they use him the right way? Am I being too hard on both these guys? What do you think?
I'll start with Penny. Look, I don't think Penny will be here a year from now. You know, we signed Carson. We have our number one running back. You know, Penny goes off, you know, that obviously changes a lot. And the reason why I'm just not that disappointed or stressed about how he does is we do have Carson, and we've got some other guys behind that could probably fill in. I'd like for him to take it to another level. Obviously, it makes us a better team, and he has a different skill set as well. I mean, he's definitely more of a guy who will bounce outside. He has really good speed. I mean, they're just different type of running backs. But I don't see us, if he has a great year, we're not going to pay two running backs top dollar or number one dollar for a running back. So I think he's playing for another team next year. That's just, you know, a quick assessment there. Collier, you know, last year was his rookie year. I mean, it really was. I mean, his first year, we know he was hurt. He didn't play. Last year, they tried to move him around a bunch. They've got to put him in one spot and let him really start to win that technique that he needs to win.
Is he more of an interior guy, do you think? Sorry to interrupt.
Well, no, it's okay. I think it depends, because even when he came out of college, you know, he wasn't a speed rusher. He's a bull rusher. He's strong. He can set the edge for you in the running game, but he was never that guy that I thought was going to be a 10-sack defensive end. So maybe he is better inside. I don't think we're ever going to. I don't think we're ever going to get that guy that says, "Oh, he's a 10-sack type of defensive lineman." But I think he's can be a very good lineman and be very good in the running game because he is strong. He can bull rush. Bull rush, by the way, is a very good technique. It closes and it collapses a pocket. You don't always have to speed rush and open up lanes and run past the quarterback. You know, sometimes you just, especially in today's game where it's so quick and you're just trying to really get some passing lanes covered up, a good bull rush where it collapses a pocket it works. So I guess the answer, a long-winded answer to your question, I think he could actually be a better inside tackle if we're looking for more production in the passing game. But you still need an edge defensive end who can set that edge in the running game, and I think he does that pretty well.
Paul, it's always a pleasure. You know that. We all win when you're here, and we appreciate it. We'll do it again next week.
As always, I appreciate it. Have a great night, you guys.
Thanks, Paul.
There you go. Paul Moyer. My goal with those intros and outros is to get Dave Wyman to roll his eyes.
We need to get Moyer saying something kind of like El Hombre, like, "So long, suckers."
Oh, yeah. Get a little tagline.
A little, sign-off line. Yeah. What would it be?
Remember to eat Organtic.
Yeah. I'll call you next week on a different number.
We shouldn't make fun of him. He's kind enough to join us every week, but
not making fun of him. It's all done in out of love.
Yeah, we love Paul. We appreciate it. All right, coming up, we're going to get a look at what's going on down at the AAA level with the voice of the Tacoma Rainiers, Mike Curto, give us an update on Jared Kelnick, if he sees any similarities to what he saw from Taylor Trammell and Luis Torrens and everything else going on there. He joins us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Lots going on around this Mariners farm system. A lot of faces going up and down. A lot of transactions happening. And a man who can straighten it out for us knows firsthand how everything's going down there with the Tacoma Rainiers is a voice of the team, Mike Curto, joining us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Mike, how are you, man?
I'm good. But if you're asking me to straighten out the AAA roster moves, it's going to be I'm having trouble keeping up, and it's like my job to do that. There have been so many moves, it's unbelievable.
It really is. And I can't – you tell me, has there been more attention being paid to what's going on with – the Rainiers and the Aqua Sox and everything. I mean, it just the level of prospects that they've got it scattered throughout the minor league system is unlike any other time. And I feel like there's so much more focus and so much more attention on, oh, Julio Rodriguez did this tonight. Oh, and here's what Cal Raleigh did tonight. And here's what Trammell did when he, I mean, it's just, I don't recall seeing that many updates or that much attention being paid.
There is more attention being paid this year, and it's due to a bunch of different things, I think. And first off, what you mentioned, they do have better prospects than they've had in recent years, especially position player prospects who are playing every day in the minor leagues. And having Everett be advanced Class A instead of short season, the players in Everett are actually, you know, at a higher level and closer to the major leagues than they've ever had there before. So, you know, Julio Rodriguez is an Everett, and that, you know, he's not, I mean, he's a couple of steps on the ladder away from the big leagues, but not that far away, and not like it would have been in the past when Everett had a short season team. And then since the Mariners did their step back plan, they have actually been promoting their prospects through their own social media and stuff. They have their own social media accounts that promote minor league players now, and that's a new development. So that, you know, puts the names in the heads of the fans in a way that didn't used to happen.
Hey, Mike, tell us about, you know, obviously we're following Jared Kelnick very closely, and you know, since he's been back there, what you've seen, what you saw from him before he went up, because you've seen this, the, you know, what kind of player a guy is, and how he makes the next step and then, you know, sometimes gets sent back. But tell us a little bit about the development of Kelenic.
Well, he's only been back for one game since he came down. It was interesting that he came over before the first game after batting practice and talked to, there were just two writers were there, and I kind of sat in on the little impromptu media session. And he seemed like he was in a great frame of mind for the situation and that he was going to try to get back on track here. He's no longer going to be overwhelmed by all the things going on in the major leagues that happen that are, you know, off the field. That, you know, he's done all that now. He's had his first taste of the major leagues, and he seemed to understand and have completely understand why he was back in Tacoma and what he needed to work on. And in his first game, he went 0-for-3 with a sac fly. The sac fly came at an important part in the game. It was early, but it brought in the tying run at the moment. And, you know, that was good to see him come through in a situation with a runner at third and less than two outs. We'll see how it pans out here in the coming days. You know, I think I guess he'll be here for a while. I don't really know. But, you know, at the beginning of the year, he played in just six games. He had the big spring training in the Cactus League. And then kind of went dormant for a little while because our season didn't start till a month later after the Mariners season had begun. And then he played here for a week, hit a couple of homers, hit everything hard, and it really did look like he was ready for the major leagues. And it turned out that I guess he needed more time.
Hey, give me a thought on Cal Raleigh, who's another prospect of, you know, somebody they picture as being a significant piece to the puzzle at the major league level. I mean, he's crushing it down there. He's in an 18-game hit streak, something like that, hitting 352. It's ridiculous.
He's been unbelievable. 18-game hitting streak, exactly as you said. For those who have been to Cheney Stadium before, we've got this giant wall in center field that's 425 feet from home plate, and only two players have ever hit a home run over this wall in a Triple-A game. He's come close twice in the last week. He just has tremendous power. He doesn't strike out that much for a power hitter, puts the ball in play a lot. He runs surprisingly well for a big guy who is a catcher. I think you can say that about a lot of young catchers, and all that catching and squatting, eventually they lose their speed, but he still has it right now. He runs well. He's a switch hitter, and he's equally effective from both sides of the plate. He has been a little better from the right side for now. You know, it's early in the season and he hasn't seen that many left-handed pitchers, but he's been good from both sides so far. And his catching, just talking to the Mariners catching coordinator Tony Arnerich and also Dan Wilson, who's been down here a lot working with him, they really like where he is right now behind the plate, and they just want him to focus on being consistent from day to day and from pitch to pitch and from batter to batter through the game. They just want him to lock in on being consistent throughout a game, and they think he's going to be able to stick behind the plate. So a lot of really encouraging things are happening with Cal Raleigh, and he's probably the story in Tacoma so far this season. We're just a month into it, but just how good he's been has been a big story here.
It's got to be fun for you, Mike, to watch a guy like Taylor Trammell. I don't know if you happen to see the broadcast last night. A lot of times, you know, the mic will pick up some swear words and things like that, and he let out a big dang it, or was that today?
It was darn it.
Maybe it was today. Yeah, but just such a nice kid, and, you know, he you know, struggled at this level up here and then came down there and just killed it. We heard that he, like, busted his tail to get out to Salt Lake City so he could play right away. Just a pretty amazing kid.
Yeah, he's really focused. He's easy to root for. You know, I'm not talking to the players much right now just because of the whole COVID thing. I'm not socializing as much as I have in the past, but so I didn't really talk to him when he was here, but you know, he came in and clearly was ready to work immediately and, you know, joined the team and played with fire, trying to stretch singles into doubles, looking to take the extra base, diving for balls in the outfield, and just, you know, doing all the things that are exciting on the field. And, you know, with his speed, If he does put the ball in play more, which is what he was working on in Tacoma and succeeded at doing, and I know he has struck out less since returning to the majors, but with his speed and his power, if he can just put the ball in play more, I think he'll turn into a productive player. And so we're keeping an eye on that and hoping it happens.
Mike, with all the back and forth with these players, I'm going to imagine we're going to talk again soon. We really appreciate you taking some time with us.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime.
There you go. The voice of your Tacoma Rainiers, broadcaster Mike Curto, spending a few minutes with us. And no doubt we'll talk again soon with the back and forth of some of these players. And I would imagine Cal Raleigh could be up sooner than we imagine. So we'll get into that as it happens. Meanwhile, looking at the outfield for this Mariner team, looks like it's could be more crowded than we've given credit for. We'll tell you what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the program as Dave and I exchange dog videos during the break with his wife, who's at home. I got Frank in studio. Frank is making a visit to the studio here, laying next to me.
Frank looks like a little stuffed animal.
He kind of does, doesn't he?
I mean, he's not that little, but I mean, he does. He's got, what a face.
He's 30 pounds of cuteness here, laying on the floor, making sure I don't leave the room.
I thought you were going to say fury.
Fury. Well, sometimes if he sees big dogs, then he's a tough guy.
So I've never seen a dog do this, what your dog does on when the animal shows come on television.
Yeah, if he sees an animal, whether it's real or cartoon, he loses his mind. And it doesn't matter whether it's a dog, a cat, a horse, a cow, he just goes berserk and hops up and down on his hind legs.
You look like he was playing the drums there.
It's frantic.
Feet go back and forth.
Yeah, so we got to take off right after the show. So he came into work today. It's bring your dog to work day, I guess, here at 7:10. But the professor will join us at the top of the hour. So get your questions ready for John Clayton if you've got football questions. Meanwhile, one name that we've talked about the outfield for the Mariners and all of the prospects and you know that it may be crowded and how does Haniger fit and all that stuff and that's assuming everybody pans out. Talking about Kyle Lewis, talking about Trammell, talking about Julio Rodriguez, and one guy we sort of left out of that conversation has really made a name for himself in a few games, more specifically in last night's game, and that'd be Jake Fraley. He's a guy we hadn't really given credit to. In fact, I ripped him on his arm, and then last night he had a tremendous throw, a tremendous throw after a tremendous catch. So he's got the ability. I guess we just didn't see it in a couple of those throws where you're like, dude, you're in shallow right field and you barely made it to the mound.
But I wonder if that was an indecision thing.
Perhaps it was. Maybe he got caught in between or something because he fired a missile last night from one step. I was watching. I rewound it to see where he was. He took one step off the warning track onto the grass and fired a BB to Shed Long, who was a little past second base, who then made a nice throw to first to turn that into a double play. But he's a guy who's now hitting, where is he at? I think he's hitting .263 now with a .500 on base percentage. Now, is that on base going to keep up? No, he's not going to be at .500. But Is he a .260 hitter? Like, can he maintain that? I don't know. He hasn't played enough to really get a feel for it, but what he has been productive. He's been good in the outfield, you know, as far as his defense, and he produced a play that produced maybe one of the great calls you're ever going to hear, and Aaron Goldsmith just going nuts so much that his voice gave out on him for a hot second.
Paredes clubs this to left field. Fraley leaps in. Fraley made the catch. Are you serious? Shed gets two. Wow. Unreal.
That is one of the great voice cracks of all time.
I got to tell you, I am such a fan of Goldsmith. He amuses the heck out of me. And when, you know, him and Blowers get going back and forth. But, of course, we got to listen to that again.
You want to hear it one more time?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you hadn't heard it, right?
No, I did not, for whatever reason.
I played it for you
that.
On my phone, which didn't do it justice. And here it is one more time. So this is for those that may have missed it or didn't see the play. Basically, Fraley saved the game because that was the bottom of the ninth. And had that ball gone over the fence where it was over the fence, he brought it back from over the fence, the game would have been over, and the Mariners would have been swept at this point.
The other thing, too, I forgot about the throw.
The throw was spectacular.
The throw in, you know, to get to double up, and he throws it right to Shed, and then Shed turns and fires it to first base. But, I mean, you know, you make an amazing play like that, you might think to kind of celebrate or, you know, pause for a second. And he fired that thing right away. The awareness was just fantastic.
Paredes clubs this to left field. Fraley leaps in. Fraley made the catch. Are you serious? Shed gets two. Wow. Unreal.
What is he saying there? Is he saying Fraley made the catch? Is that what he says?
I don't know.
Can you hear what he's saying there, Lefko? I think he's saying Fraley made the catch, but he just kind of voice cracks and he drags it out.
Yeah, he was trying to say that.
Is that what he said?
But just a lot of A's in Fraley in between there.
One more time.
Paredes clubs this to left field. Fraley leaps in. Fraley made the catch. Are you serious? Shed gets two. Wow. Unreal.
So good.
This is the second time that we've played something like this multiple times. The last time, you remember the last Goldsmith call?
Oh, which one was it? We played a few of them.
Tampa Bay.
Oh, was it the floater?
We got a floater.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so entertaining. He told a story today about Fernando Rodney shooting his arrow, and they asked him what he was shooting it at, and he said, "I'm shooting it at the Lions." And there's a bunch of Tigers on top of
Tiger Stadium.
The Tiger Stadium. And it sounds like something I would say, first of all. I thought it was funny. A lion, tiger, whatever. But, he was telling that story today. But, again, I've become a fan. But that was the play by Fraley, to your point about, you know, his arm. And next week, you know, I wrote down, we only got to do 10 minutes with Mike Blowers this last week. But, you know, maybe next week, just see where he rates the throwing arms in the outfield.
Yeah, because that was decidedly different. I mean, I got to give him credit because I ripped his arm after we saw a couple throws. And, again, most notably, I can't remember what the play was, but he fielded a ball in shallow right field and then looked like he put everything into it, just heaving it up there. And it bounced by the pitcher's mound with no steam. He wasn't trying to give it the one hop where you see guys will put something on it, but they intentionally one hop it.
Yeah.
Generally, that's on the infield, but it just was like, what was that? That was a terrible throw, and there was nothing on it. So I was like, all right, this guy doesn't have much of an arm. And we'd seen another throw that was similar, but I don't know if it was adrenaline after that catch or what happened, but that was a missile. It was a great throw, a great catch, a great relay from Shed Long to double up the guy. So it was a fun game. You know, I'm glad they got one win in the series, but that was huge. And then the other part of it is Dylan Thomas, and I don't know what's going to happen with him. I don't know what kind of a player he's going to turn into, but he comes up with his first hit in extra innings, drives in a couple of much-needed runs, it turns out, as the bullpen was a little leaky in that game, and he came up with a big moment. And he also came up with a great catch. And then after the game, and you talked about watching him on the Zoom call where he was emotional. He was emotional again after the game, and you couldn't help but sit there and just go, man, I'm rooting for the guy. I don't know what he's going to turn into, but he's impossible not to root for.
Once again, it was just, you know, surreal. You think about – you try and put yourself in that moment and, you know, think about it so that when it actually does happen, it doesn't, you know, speed up on you or catch you off guard. But, you know, once I saw them after the game, I couldn't help but break down and get emotional. You know, it was a family effort to get here. You know, I couldn't be sitting where I am right now without, you know, both my mom, my dad, my sister, you know, just everybody in my family. They've been the ones that, you know, keep me going all these years, and I'm so grateful, you know, to have had that support system.
That's good. I mean, you see him, awesome. And then he stopped talking. He was wiping his eyes. I'm just going, oh man, I mean, he's spent about a decade in the minor leagues. Wow. This is his first major league hit in extra innings, and he made that great catch as well. And he was fired up. He's chest bumping Trammell and center field, and
well, and he threw it back up in the crowd. I wonder if somebody was out there back there giving him a hard time, you know. I don't know if it looked like, but yeah, lots of emotion for him. That's a lot of bus rides and a lot of cheese sandwiches. Hopefully not as bad as the ones the A's.
I'm going to say they aren't.
Yeah, but no, this is a classy organization, unlike the A's. But yeah, that was just so cool to watch. You're right. I mean, he's not one of the, I mean, you look at his numbers down, you know, he's batting over 300 down in Tacoma. You know, you see all the reasons why you bring him up. The thing you don't see is, well, he's 30.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe he's not part of it going forward, but in the meantime, it just makes for such a great story.
Yeah, it's just very easy to root for. All right, we're going to talk some football coming up. If you guys have questions for John Clayton, you can text him in right now to 710-710, the Mac and Jack's text line. He joins us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.